Let's open our Bibles to the Old Testament book of Ruth this morning, please. God is always at work. Jesus reminded us of this reality about the Father in John chapter 5. Now, just for some context, Jesus had healed a man on the Sabbath, and he was being rebuked for it. And Jesus said, "My Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working." Now, I think if we're honest, the thing is this. Sometimes it's hard to see what the Father is doing. You know, you might agree with me this morning that God is always at work, but sometimes it's hard to see what the Father is doing. Now, with people, it's sometimes obvious who is working and who is not. My father-in-law was a man who knew how to work, and he did not like it when people stood around looking at work. And he said to me one time, he said, "Here, do this and make yourself useful as well as ornamental." I said, "One time." He never had to say that to me again. Now, do you ever wonder if God's taking a break? Does it ever feel like maybe your situation is on the back burner because there's a lot of things that might be far more important? I mean, you're over here in Greenville and you're praying about your teenager, and there are wars in Sudan and Gaza and Ukraine, and there's an election coming up. I mean, God's got a lot going on. And then there was the eclipse. I mean, that had to take a lot of energy to keep all that lined up, you know, and make sure it passed in the right place. I mean, God must have been preoccupied with all that stuff. And if you think you're caller number 806 and there's a 3-day wait time on hold, how does that make you feel? Hopeless? Cynical? Bitter? Maybe like Saul, King Saul, you feel like you might need to take some things into your own hands. I mean, if God's a little too busy, maybe you should help him out. Let's settle a couple of things this morning that I think are foundational in theology and they're foundational to our text. Number one, God has infinite capacity for his work. He is not distracted. He is not too busy for you and your situation. You are not on hold. You are not on a wait list. God has capacity for you and Ukraine and all the rest of the world all at the same time. Amen? Amen. He's infinite. And by infinite, that means he's not divided. He's not split up. He's not so focused on one thing, he can't be also focused to the same extent on something else. All right? So God has infinite capacity for his work. Number two, God is always working. He's doing things right now that you can't see. Just because you can't see what he's doing does not mean he's inactive. There are some people who think I only work one day a week. Because you only see me working one day a week. That doesn't mean I only work one day a week. And if that's true with a human being that you can observe regularly, it's certainly true with a God who inhabits the whole universe. He is at work even when we don't know that he is working. Number three, God works with his people. I've used this phrase before. It's not original with me, but we are part of a divine human cooperative. We do our part. God does his. And we have seen this in our study already. God was working in the lives of Ruth and Naomi and Boaz. Their lives would all intersect. But on the front end of that barley harvest, they didn't know that. Boaz had planted his crops and hired laborers for the harvest. Naomi humbled herself and went back to her home in Bethlehem. And Ruth simply honored the law and went out to glean what she could for herself and for her mother-in-law. Everybody was just doing what they knew to do. Last week, we learned that Boaz responded to Ruth's efforts by rewarding her with food and water and protection. He blessed her for making the choice to come under the wings of the Almighty. He blessed her, and he became a part of the means to that blessing. Boaz told his harvesters to let her glean even among the sheaves, and to leave some handfuls of grain on purpose for her. Now let's pick up our story in Ruth chapter 2, verse number 17, and see where things went from there. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. Then she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. So she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. That was the parched grain, in case you weren't here or you forgot. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where have you gleaned today? And where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead." And Naomi said to her, "This man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives." Ruth the Moabitess said, "Well, he also said to me, 'You shall stay close to my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women." Notice the change. "And that people do not meet you in any other field." So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security or rest for you, that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself and put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do." And she said to her, "All that you say to me, I will do." Now, note, first of all, the provision of God in this text. It was God who provided the seed. It was God who provided the growth. It was God who provided the harvest. But it was Ruth that went out and picked up the stalks of barley. It says that she beat out what she had gleaned. So just to get the picture here, she's just picking up single stalks of barley, all right? And at the end of it, she beat it out, and she gained an ephah, all right? Now, an ephah is probably more than you think. It's 30 pounds of grain. That's more than daily bread. That would have been enough for the two women for at least a week or more. God was working, but so was Ruth. See, when you go out looking for grains ahead and you come back with an ephah, some of you are wondering why this bag is up here. Now, this is not 30 pounds. My biceps are not that strong. But this is like the size of a bag of barley she came home with. So just think about that now. She goes out looking for heads of grain, and she comes back with 30 pounds on her shoulder. And it was significant enough that it made Naomi notice what had happened. So she picked up her grain and she headed for the city. And to me, it's easy to imagine her excitement on her way back to see her mother-in-law. It's sort of like me coming home from the grocery store. Now, if you don't know, I'm terrible at the grocery store. Just last week, Diane sent me to the store to get cheese and eggs. All right, that's pretty simple. Most of you would know what to do. But I walked in, I had no idea. I walked into Meijer, and there's just aisles of beverages and fish and all this kind of stuff. Thankfully, I ran into Ransom and Joanna Quarter, and they were in there. And I said, "Guys, I'm looking for the cheese and the milk and the eggs." I said, do you know where that stuff is?" And they go, "Everything that you really need in this store is in the far back corner." Because it's designed, Pastor, to help you walk past everything you don't need in hopes that you might buy it. See, I'm getting an education in this whole moment. So I went to the back and I found it. I found what she sent me for without having to call her. Thank you. Thank you. So I came home and I actually came home with what she sent me to get and no more. I know it. It was such a good day. Now, okay, now see this what you're feeling right now? Now you're getting it. That's how Ruth felt, I think. She was feeling that way on the way home. You know, she had this bag of grain, 30 pounds of grain, and she had a little snack stuck in as well. So she's pumped. So Naomi was waiting for her, and she saw what she had gleaned. And I think the exchange between them probably went something like this. Naomi said, "Wow, looks like you had a good day." And Ruth responded, "I sure did. I brought home this ephah, and I have a treat for you." She brought out what she had kept back from Boaz. Remember the parched grain? She ate it till she was satisfied, then she's tucked a little bit away. She pulls it out now, and she gives it to Naomi, parched grain. Now, whenever I meditate on these stories, I try to put myself in there, and I try to imagine what Naomi did. And I don't think it's a stretch to believe that Naomi had the surprise smile, you know? Like, she's a bitter woman, remember? And she's kind of sour on the day, and now all of a sudden she gets some parched grain, and I think she got that sort of, you know, that sort of surprise smile. Parched grain. I wonder if she had even said to Ruth at one time, "You know, one of the things I've always loved about harvest time is parched grain. I'm sure I'll never have that again, given my circumstances. And now here it is." You ever wonder if things are ever going to be different? You ever wonder if God could maybe do more than you ask or think? You ever say, "You know, I don't think that will ever happen." And then God. I don't know. Parched grain. But when you're starving and you haven't had, and you've been in a famine, and all of a sudden you get parched grain, you think you'd never have it again? It's a good day. Ruth, it said in verse 14, had been satisfied. And I mentioned that Boaz was satisfied with her satisfaction. And then I think Ruth was satisfied with Naomi's satisfaction. Have you ever noticed how goodwill has a way of spreading? Bad will has a way of spreading too. People that have had a bad day at work come home and kick the cat, you know, and people that have, oh, I'm sorry, the dog. People that have had a bad day, you know, they come home and they're mad. But people that come home with goodwill share goodwill. Goodwill has a way of expanding. And Boaz had blessed Ruth. Ruth blessed Naomi. Goodwill has a way of spreading. So Naomi asked the question, "Where did you work today? Blessed is the one who took notice of you." And that phrase, "took notice of you," was also used in chapter 2, verse 10. It says, "Why did you take notice of me?" Now, it's a very interesting phrase. It means looked at and then treated with respect. Now, young men, may I just say to you, when you cast your eyes on a young lady, this would be a good model for you right here. Look at and treat with respect. That's a good model. Boaz looked on her and treated her with respect. And I think there's a lesson in the kind of character that Boaz had, and it wouldn't be a bad lesson for every young man and every older man in this congregation to consider. The grain was God's provision, but so was the man who blessed Ruth. Ruth answered, "Well, the man's name is Boaz." And as I imagine the scene, Naomi's slight smile from the parched grain went to that face that women make when they stumble on a bargain. Now, you know this face, right? I mean, you know the face of when a woman stumbles. Diane has like one face reserved for bargains. And when we're in the store together and I see her and she's got that face, I'm like, just reach for the wallet. It's over. Sometimes I see her at the end of the aisle, and this has literally happened. She knows what I'm going to do right now. She goes. She has the face. She's got the finger. I'm just reaching for the wallet. And so, you know, it's like, well, 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 what have we here? That is, I think, what was going on right here now. Naomi's world is blowing up on her. So she realizes what's going on. I just call this the realization. Verse 20, it's kind of a complicated sentence in the New King James Version, so I want to have you listen to it in the New Living Translation. She says, "May the Lord bless him. He is showing his kindness to us as well as to your dead husband." That man is one of our closest relatives. He is one of our family redeemers. See, I'm not sure that Ruth really grasped what was going on. I think this was so much bigger than she knew. She was just out. She was happy because she had 30 pounds of grain and she had some parched grain for a snack. She didn't really know what was happening here. And when Naomi hears the name and she sees what's going on, she begins to see that there's a greater significance to this than Ruth possibly understood. That word kindness that's used in this verse is hesed. It's kind of like the New Testament word agape. I think most of us are familiar with the word agape, that sort of unconditional love of God. Sometimes it's used between people. Sometimes it's used between God and people. There's a similar kind of word in the Old Testament, hesed. And sometimes it's used between people, and sometimes it's used between God and people. Sometimes it refers to God's covenant loyalty that is the result of love. In other words, because God loved Israel, he made a covenant with them, and he keeps his promises. It's covenant loyalty that's rooted in love. Or, for example, because I love Diane, I entered a covenant with her, and I intend to keep it. Boaz was living under the hesed of God, and he was demonstrating hesed to others. He was living in the sphere of love, so he loved. He believed that he was blessed to bless, that he was loved to love, and that he was cared for to care for others. All right? Are you picking up a theme here? Yesterday was such a blast. This bag actually was a leftover from yesterday. We had 56 volunteers showed up yesterday to pack meals for Kids Against Hunger. We started set up at 7:30. We were cleaning up at 10:30. We packed 10,000 meals in that time frame. And big thank you to all the people who showed up yesterday. And all of that food went to Montcalm County food pantries. And it was all gone by 10:30. We had people lined up out there taking the food, and it was going out the door. It was really great. But you know what? We're blessed to bless. Our deacons kicked in $2,000 toward that from the Benevolent Fund. When you give to the Benevolent Fund, you indirectly helped all that. And you know what? As a church, we've been blessed. Amen? And this isn't just for us. We are blessed to bless. We have been loved to love. We have been cared for to care for. And Boaz was living like that. He was getting he understood that, and Naomi was understanding that. Ruth was understanding that. This blessing had a way of working its way down the line. So Ruth went on in verse 21. And again, there's a little nuance to the language here, and there's not a lot of agreement among the scholars about which translation is right. I pointed out the gender distinction as I read through it. It reads in the New Living Translation, "He said I should come back and stay with his harvesters until the entire harvest is completed." You notice when I read it in the New King James Version, it says, "He also said to me, you shall stay close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest." And then Naomi says, "Stay near the young women." So we don't really know what, but what everybody agrees about in verse 23 is this, that she stayed close to the young women. All the translations agree about that. So whether Ruth said, "Boaz told me to stay close to the young men," and Naomi said, "No, stay close to the young women," or whether it's just generic, stay close to his harvesters and stay in his field, we don't really know. But what we do know is that when Naomi said, stay close to his young women, Ruth took that advice and she stayed close to the young women. Now, maybe I'm reading into it a little bit. You can accuse me of that. I'm just telling you straight up, this is my opinion. But it seems like there's a little intentionality here back and forth. Maybe even a little testing of the heart. I mean, men and women then were men and women. And Boaz, Boaz, may have been wondering, you know, I wonder if she's going to come back. I invited her to come back. I wonder if she's going to come back. He noticed her. And he, you know, went to bed that night and he probably thought, I wonder if she's going to come back tomorrow. And then she did come back. And then he may have been wondering if she would, you know, work near the men. Maybe she's got an eye on one of these young guys, you know, with big biceps and a good tan. From chapter 3, verse 10, we know that Boaz took note that she did not work alongside the young men. So not only does she come back, but now Boaz goes, huh, she's staying with the girls. She's not over there flirting. Interesting. Naomi may have been bitter, but she was not dumb. And she was not numb. She had enough faith left to realize that God was working and she wanted to cooperate. She knew her culture. She knew her people. She knew the ways of a man and a woman. And Ruth was wise to listen to her. The law of the gleaners put Ruth in that field. The wisdom of an older woman kept her there. I hope you are listening to this. There are some lessons that are not just laying right on the ground here. They're there. Now, don't jump ahead too quickly to chapter 3, verse 1, because there's a very important detail that we should not overlook. If we read chapter 3, verse 1, without chapter 2, verse 23, it seems like Naomi was in quite a hurry. You know, it says she dwelt with her mother-in-law in verse 23, and she did this gleaning, and then all of a sudden Naomi says in chapter 3, verse 1, now, I'm seeking security for you, and here's a plan. You know, it looks like speed dating. Like 0 to 60 in no time at all. But that is not what happened. The text gives us a very clear detail here, and what it says is that the barley and then the wheat harvest. Now, just note this someplace, maybe in your margin or in your notes, that could have taken between 3 and 5 months. All right, that's really important. Between 3 and 5 months now passed between verse 23 of chapter 2 and chapter 3, verse 1. And so between that, in that little gap right there, there was a lot of work. And there was sweat. And maybe there were some glances. I think she looked at me. I think he looked at me. There were more conversations over parched grain. He was listening to her talk. And she was listening to him talk. And, you know, right? I mean, you're all sitting here like, oh, this is how it works. You know how it works. Don't act so Vulcan. I mean, long ago in my childhood, before texting and social media, we wrote notes. We folded them up in a little triangle. And we said, I like you, do you like me? Check yes or no, right? That's what you did. Yeah, this generation has no idea how important that is. You know, you had to have an apostle to take it over there and get it back, and don't you read that on the way, I'll kill you. You know, that kind of, it's a whole cultural thing. It's gone. It's lost. So I think there was some of that going on. You know, could you pass me the parched grain? Sure. How much would you like? You know, that whole thing. This is all going on. If you can't see this, you're single. I mean, that's. But I'm teaching you what to do. I wasn't being pejorative when I said that. Now I'm in trouble all over the place. Just. All right, back to my notes. Chapter 2 began at the beginning of the barley harvest. Chapter 3 begins when the barley harvest season was coming to a close. Now, number 3, the plan. Naomi had two principal problems, and I suspect that she had been bringing these problems to God in prayer. You know, you can still pray even when you're bitter, and you actually should pray even when you're bitter. And there were a couple of things going on here. Number one, she desired to get her deceased husband's property back. Because of the flow of the context here, it's pretty obvious that they had mortgaged their land to make the move to Moab. Where'd they get the money? In a famine time, how'd they leverage their old money from Bethlehem? How'd they leverage their old money to get out and go to Moab? Well, they mortgaged their property. So this property that she came back to was no longer in their ownership. It was in somebody else's ownership. They had mortgaged it to get some funds. And secondly, she was concerned about Ruth's future. She wanted to secure her future. So even though she was struggling emotionally, she still believed in the Almighty and in His care. She still had a flicker of hope in God's mercy for these two conundrums that she faced. At some point, she realized that the current situation might be the answer to her prayer. Perhaps, she thought, God was working both of her problems out in one way. You know, God can do more than we ask or think. This morning, as I was fixing my breakfast, I heard the song by Shane and Shane, and the line goes like this: I don't know what you're doing, but I know what you've done. I love that. And as she looked back on how God had cared for her people and how God had cared for her, she thought, you know what? Maybe there's more going on here than I can see. Now, what she suggests as a plan here is not scheming. Her ideas were based on her knowledge of God's law and therefore were an act of faith. She was taking God at His word. And here's what I mean. There were two laws in reference here. Two laws. Number one was from Leviticus chapter 25 that outlined the kinsman redeemer law. And very simply, this is what it is. When somebody had to sell their land or mortgage their land to survive financially, the nearest relative was to buy back the land in order to keep it in the family. Okay? Simple enough? The second law, Deuteronomy chapter 25, outlines how the family name was to be preserved. If a married man died, his brother was to marry the widow and preserve her and his brother's name. All right? Now, don't start thinking about your sister-in-laws right now or anything like that. This is the Old Testament law. In order to preserve the family name, if your brother died, you were to take her on and preserve his name. Now, if the brother refused, this is in the law. You can read this for yourself in Deuteronomy 25. If the brother refused, the widow would remove one of the sandals from the guy and spit in his face. It's in the Bible. I mean, so my imagination goes crazy with this. I'm thinking, all right, now how does it? So there's that a family reunion, you know? And the guy's relaxed, he's got his feet up on a chair, and she comes over, she's like, you didn't keep me. Takes off his sandal, phew, puts a big old loogie right in his face. And then everybody at the family reunion goes, oh, I know what happened here. He refused. She shamed him because he would not honor God's law. Whew. Now, historically and biblically, we don't know when or how these two laws merged. But they were. And the merger of these laws became the basis for Naomi's plan. So in verse 1 of chapter 3, you see this really beautiful heart of Naomi for Ruth. Sometimes I'm a little tough on her, that is on Naomi. She was mindful of God and she was mindful of Ruth. And for the second time now, she says, I want you to find rest. I want it to be well with you. Whatever bitterness Naomi had was starting to melt, I think. She was not only interested in her own needs, but she longed for Ruth to have a flourishing life. And again, here's one of these principles. It's just underneath the surface. You know, I think sometimes helping others gets our minds off ourselves. And if you're bitter and preoccupied with your own struggles, maybe the best thing for you to do is try to figure out how to take care of somebody else, how to meet their needs, how to see them flourish in life. And that's what Naomi's doing here. She's just concerned about Ruth being secure in the future. So she goes on to explain the situation. Chapter 3, verse 2, she said that Boaz was a near relative and therefore had an opportunity and an obligation to fulfill. Naomi knew that Boaz would be at the threshing floor winnowing barley. Now, how did she know that? Well, that was typical to the season. Because in the evening, at the threshing floor, the breezes would come up and about 6 or 7 o'clock, and so you're starting to chuck this grain up in the air and it's blowing the chaff off. And she knew that that's where they'd be. It's harvest season. Where's a farmer during harvest? In the field. At the elevator. I mean, that's just pretty obvious what's going on here. The end of the day, as I said, was best for this. The breeze was coming in, helped with the separation of the chaff from the grain. And the owner often slept near his grain to protect it from thieves. That was the custom of the day. So Naomi, in chapter 3, verse 3, told Ruth to bathe, put on perfume, and put on her best garment. This wasn't just to focus merely on the outward appearance, but if Ruth was a hard worker and a good looker, that wouldn't be bad. I'm already in trouble this morning, so I'm just going to keep going. When describing women, Diane's grandpa is reported to have said, "Well, boys, you got your work horses and you got your show horses." Oh, isn't that awful? Many years ago, that's how people talked, you know. That's just... Don't say that at school tomorrow, kids, or you'll get sent home. I know that. But see, Naomi wanted Ruth to let Boaz know that she was both. God was working, but she was going to be a part of the process, and a little perfume in the dark couldn't hurt. She also wanted Ruth to time her visit well, not while he was finishing his work. That's bad time. And second, not so other people could see what was going on. So verse 4 says, after he has his meal and it's time for him to sleep, notice where he lies down, uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. Now, if there are any young women here this morning interested in a young man, I don't suggest trying this. And then saying, but it's in the Bible. If you're at the foot of some guy's bed tomorrow morning, you know, with your head under the covers, that's a bad idea, all right? Really bad idea. This is an odd custom. But here's what was going on. At the end of the workday, the men would take off their sandals and cover their feet with their mantle. You know what a mantle is? It's kind of like a jacket. A mantle is something you wear over your shoulders. And so at night, you lie down, cover up your feet. Lean up next to a stack of barley or wheat. Sleep next to your stuff. This action of uncovering his feet and covering herself with his mantle would be Ruth's way of saying, as I have come under the wings of the Almighty, I am willing to come under your mantle. I'm willing to come under your home. your household. This wasn't sexual. This wasn't in a perverse way sort of forward. It wasn't because Boaz couldn't bring himself to pop the question. You know, some guys just can't commit. This was the custom of the day when a woman was declaring her availability to the kinsman redeemer. Now, there's one other thing here. The text doesn't say this, but I think she did this at night and in the way that she did out of respect for Boaz. If she and Naomi were wrong about him, everybody could walk away without shame. There'd be no sandal and no spit. There was mutual respect and goodwill being expressed. Now, we'll see what happened next week. But the beautiful thing to me is Ruth's response. She says, "All that you say to me, I will do." I mean, she doesn't back up and say, "Okay, now I'm sure this is a good plan, but here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to modify this a little bit." I mean, have you ever had a really great plan and then somebody screws it up with their idea? I mean, has that ever happened to you? And she doesn't do that. She just says, "Oh, okay, Naomi, you know that this is rooted in the law of God. And you know your customs, you know your ways, you know what's going on around here. And I know you just have my good in mind. You don't have any ill will toward me. You're not hoping I'll get kicked out of the harvest field. I mean, you're doing this because you have goodwill for me. And so, I'm just going to do what you said." You know, when an older believer says, "Here is God's way, walk in it," it's a good idea to do it. The New Testament encourages this in the book of Titus. In the Old Testament, of course, you had Esther. She would do the same after Mordecai's advice. And she said, "Well, if I perish, I perish." Remember that great story about Esther? Mordecai says, "Go in. You might be here for such a time as this." And she takes his advice. She says, "If I perish, I perish." Of course, over 1,000 years later, that is after the story of Ruth, Mary would say to the angel who came to her, "Let it be to me according to your word." And our Savior had that same spirit. "Not my will, but thine be done." It's no mystery why Peter wrote and why Bart read at the beginning of the service, "Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, and he will exalt you in due time." This is living in harmony with reality. Now, whether we know it or not, we're all looking for Boaz. We're all in debt. You're like, "Nope, I listen to Dave Ramsey. I am not." I'm not talking about your finances. We are all in debt. We are all vulnerable. We are all in need of rest. And thankfully, there is one who has said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." We don't have to come to him at night and wait in suspense for the morning light. We don't have to wonder if he's willing to make us his own. We come to the nail-pierced feet. And he not only covers us with his mantle, he robes us in righteousness and clothes us in the garments of salvation to have and to hold from this day forward. He will not just take us, not out of obligation, not just because he has to, but because he wants to. His chesed drives his desire for his covenant. And once we're his, nothing can separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus, our Lord. So there's something here for all of you this morning in this story, and I'd like you to just bow your head right now, if you would, and close your eyes, and just remind you that he's waiting for your yes. If you're not a part of the family yet, if you haven't brought yourself under the mantle of the Almighty, the wings of the Almighty, why hold now? And second, God is at work, believer. Don't doubt it. I mean, there may be a part for you in the process, but don't take things into your own hands. Don't step out of bounds to see something accomplished. God is at work. Don't doubt it. Just because you can't see it right now doesn't mean he's not working. You just be faithful. And humble yourself under his mighty hand and under his word. He will exalt you He will care for you in due time.